all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Later today on This American Life, the story of Cain and Abel. Finally, we hear Cain's side of things. And the story of a small town in Illinois and the question, are you your brother's keeper? Lots of people in town were scared of this one man, a terrifying man, a bully, and most people did nothing to stop him. And then he went on a rampage. Biblical stories ripped from today's headlines later today.
Today at 6 on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
It's 5 p.m. Central Time. Keeping the Faith with Steve Shoemaker is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith is Rabbi Norman Klein. Welcome.
Thank you.
Rabbi,
nice to be here.
Good to have you here. We're talking about the situation in Israel, and you just came back from Israel, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday?
Thursday.
So we're talking about a very contemporary glimpse. So how did you happen to be in Israel this time?
I went for the General Assembly of the United Jewish Communities. It's a annual conference that usually takes place in the United States, but this is the second time in 5 years that it's taken place in Israel.
And who all goes to this?
Well, people involved in their various community federations. In our case, the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation came with six representatives, myself being one of them, and the executive director of the federation, Lee Malhato, and four other individuals came.
How were they chosen? Were they self-selected?
They were self-selected. Anyone who wanted to come would be welcome, and hopefully they would be people who had been active in the federation here in Champaign.
Uh-huh. And what happens when you get there for this? It's an annual meeting?
It's an annual meeting. Uh-huh. Many of the events have to do with, usually, with American Jewish communities and their needs here, as well as the needs of the worldwide Jewish community. And of course, one of the main beneficiaries of philanthropic contributions that are given by Jews in America and elsewhere in the world is Israel. So it seems appropriate to go to Israel to see what some of the money is given to the United Jewish Communities
annual appeal or something.
Where that appeal money goes.
Now, if six went from the Champaign-Urbana area, from the Jewish community here, how many were there total from the U.S.?
Well, I've heard different estimates, but it's somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 people.
Wow.
A large group. Many of the, between the 4 and 6,000, many of them were people who had come for part of the General Assembly from different places in the world, including Israel itself. But I think over 4,000 came from North America.
Wow. Now, how long is the General Assembly?
In this case, it lasted, I think, from Sunday night through Wednesday. We actually left on November the 9th and had what was called a mission before the actual meeting. And what a mission is, in this parlance, is a trip to various places in Israel to see some, among other things, some of the ways in which the United Jewish Community supports various projects in and around Israel.
Hmm. Well, give our listeners, who of course include people from the Jewish community, but also people from different religious communities or are just interested in topics like this, give them some idea. What are some of these projects that are supported by the Jewish communities in the U.S.?
Well, they're usually social welfare projects in various forms. One of the main ways in which the money is used is to help people who are either disadvantaged in various ways or at risk. For instance, youth at risk is a big beneficiary of the monies given through the United Jewish communities. These could be both Jewish youth, Israeli Jewish youth, or other citizens and members of the Israeli community. For instance, on one of the trips that I took, we went to a Druze two Druze villages in the Galilee. The Druze, for those who might not know, are a religious group that broke away from the mainstream Islamic group in the in the 11th or 12th century. And they have a very close-knit community in Israel, and also part of them are in Lebanon and in Syria. And they're full citizens of Israel, and they're wanting to take part in the full educational opportunities that Israel has to offer, and we help support them in those efforts by helping with their schools and making sure that those youth that might be at risk get the social services they need to become good citizens.
And the religious group of the Druze is rather unusual in that they don't like to talk about themselves. We've never had one, for example, as a guest on this Keeping the Faith program, because part of their belief system is that they're to sort of stay anonymous, I guess, almost.
It's very interesting, and I guess I can agree with you in that it's certainly been one of my desires over the course of the many times I visited Israel to have conversations with the Druze. And in fact, on our last temple trip to Israel about 3 years ago, we did visit a Druze community. But this was really the first time during this current trip when I had a long conversation with many Druze people as just part of the whole picture. And I learned, among other things, that they are very interested in education and in most respects are similar to Americans and other Israelis, for that matter, in their desires for modern life. They do have certain aspects of their culture that are very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, women have to remain in the community unless they marry another Druze from a different village. So they can't really work outside of the community. They have to commute even to school if they go to another city.
Mm-hmm.
But they were willing to talk to us at great length. I think they were very receptive, partly because they saw the group that came to visit them as people who wanted to help them.
Mm-hmm.
They were part of this philanthropic effort.
Now, although most of the money given by the United Jewish Communities certainly goes to help the Jewish community in Israel, you're pointing out that some of the money also goes to help, in this case, an example of one of the Muslim groups. Is that true of Muslim and Christian groups that might be in Palestine and Israel?
Yes. I want to give you another example, too, because I also had an opportunity to talk with a Bedouin young woman. And this was a somewhat of a small meeting in which a lady who is a resident of a kibbutz and this Bedouin woman who is a master's in social work were helping people in her community settle in various places in the Negev and increase their chances for employment and adapting to, you might say, modern life. Because the Bedouin community in Israel is probably the community most in need of social services. And that is mostly due to the fact that traditionally Bedouins have been wanderers. That has been part of their culture. And there's been a strong desire on the part of the Israeli government to have them settled so they could benefit fully from Israeli society. And so there has been quite an adaptation challenge for them. So, yes, the Bedouin community is also the beneficiary of the UJC philanthropies.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple, who has just returned with a group of half a dozen folks from the Jewish community here in Champaign-Urbana from an extended trip in Israel. And our topic today on Keeping the Faith is, what is the situation in Israel these days? And we'll be talking with the rabbi about that, even more generally, including some political issues, of course. This is a live call-in program on WILL each Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6, and we encourage listeners to call with questions in addition to the questions I ask. You may reach us anywhere you hear the program, including on the Internet, at 1-800-222-9455. That's a toll-free line, a free call. You may also access several local lines by dialing one number in Champaign-Urbana. That's 333-9455. So 333-WILL in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else the program is heard, including on the Internet in the continental U.S., 1-800-222-9455. Rabbi Klein, just in today's news on the Chicago Tribune this morning, there was a front-page story on more Israelis challenging Sharon's tough approach, an article written by Joel Greenberg to the Tribune from Jerusalem. What kind of political discussion do American Jews get into when they get to Israel in talking to Israelis?
Well, it varies, of course, from person to person. I suppose the majority of the people who came to the General Assembly in Israel were people who, if not totally supportive of Israel's policy, were largely supportive of them. But there were protesters at various of the meetings, including one where Sharon was the featured speaker. There's absolutely nothing that an American Jew could say in the Israeli political context that hasn't been already said by an Israeli. Mm-hmm. It has Israel has, in my opinion, one of the most free-flowing democratic societies known to humankind.
It may be one of the noisier democracies.
That's right. So there are people there of every political stripe, and they let their opinion be heard. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. But I'd say, you know, the main focus, you might say, of the General Assembly was to, having it in Israel in the first place, was to show the support of the American and, in fact, the worldwide Jewish community outside of Israel, which is often referred to as the diaspora, for Israel as a Jewish state. And this doesn't necessarily mean that people are supportive of any particular political leader or political party in Israel.
Or policy.
Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, I think most Jews worldwide feel why they should have their voice heard, that ultimately it's the decision of the Israelis how they're going to run their own state.
Now, the state of Israel is so small. Give people a sense of the size of the country we're talking about that you've just come back from.
Well, it's generally acknowledged that Israel is the size of New Jersey. And I come from the East Coast, so I have a sense.
You know what that means.
I know what that means. New Jersey isn't all that small when you're driving from one end to the other, but it's certainly not one of the bigger states. It takes a fair amount of time to drive around it, however. I mean, in this current trip, the mission that we took essentially just went from the airport in, it was called Ben-Gurion Airport, between Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, drove to Haifa, and then from Haifa drove around the Galilee and then back to Jerusalem with a side trip to Masada, and then drove for a day for some events in various parts of Israel and ended up in Tel Aviv. And that's the northern part, the north, central and northern part of Israel. And it can take, with traffic and wrong turns, 3 or so hours to get to some place in the Galilee from Jerusalem. But and even longer to go to the southern tip, which is the Eilat in the south of the Negev.
Down in the Sinai?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's north of the Sinai.
Oh, but, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All
right on the edge of the Sinai.
But if one were to drive from east to west and ended up in the Mediterranean, how many hours would it take?
If
you didn't hit traffic.
Gosh, yeah. In some places it's so narrow that you could, if without traffic, it would probably take far less than an hour.
Uh-huh.
to drive across the country in its narrowest part.
And other places, maybe up to two or three, but
that's right.
But it's not very wide. Now, it is long north to south, relatively
right.
long.
Relatively, right.
But even then, a trip might be, what, 5 or 6 hours, maybe?
Well, if you want to go all the way from one tip to the other, it would probably take, I think, 6 hours at least. I've never done it directly,
right,
all the way from Mount Hermon to Eilat. Mm-hmm. That would be quite a trip.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's nothing like driving across Texas.
And what's the and what's the population?
Population, I think, is about 5.5 million Jews.
That was the last I heard.
And 1.5 million Arabs.
Uh-huh.
With a very small.
So about the population of Chicago at this point.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. And of course, this small country. Is surrounded by countries with various different political systems and various attitudes towards the state of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
How did it feel when you were there with these 4,000 to 6,000 folks from the American Jewish communities? Did you feel at risk? It's surrounded by countries, some of which are hostile.
Well, at current political standoff, you might say, there's less fear of any threat from the countries than there is of terrorism
mm-hmm.
Via the Palestinians. And but even so, though many of people in the community expressed their concern for our safety when we left,
mm-hmm.
in fact, when we were actually there, there was really almost no concerns that we had as visitors in Israel. It's a remarkably secure society, considering all the trauma they've gone through. I wanted to mention in passing about this that one of the most impressive things about visiting Israel is their resilience in the face of what we've often appears to us from the readings and in the news to be a country that's always under threat. Because, for instance, one of the places that was bombed by terrorists was the Hillel Cafe in Jerusalem. We actually visited that cafe, and it's functioning as it always has in the past. I think within a matter of a week, it was cleaned up. Of course, regrettably, there were many people hurt. Some are still recovering. Some were killed. But the cafe itself has been totally refurbished and is full of clients eating and drinking there, coffee, whatever. Life goes on in Israel, and there's a kind of a joy in life that is sort of irrepressible. So I think if one of the main contributions Israel can now give to the world community that's increasingly under threat of terrorism is this sense of resilience and the determination to not let terrorism strike terror into the body politic. I found that totally remarkable and completely contagious. Within moments, I felt secure in mm-hmm. Israel.
Now, you were in Israel last week when the horrible bombings of the two synagogues in Istanbul, Turkey, relatively close by, happened. And then the bombings the next day, was it, of the bank and the British consulate.
In the same week.
And you were in Israel when
yes,
all that
both
was
of those.
Mm-hmm. And how was that reported? How was it mm-hmm. felt? How did you feel when that was going on?
Well, I felt I was in a country that really understands the experience of having terrorist bombings. There was a remarkable outpouring of sympathy to the Turkish people in Israel, and it was, you might say, universal, whether it was on TV or the news or in person or at these meetings. People were expressing their concern for the Turks and their empathy with them. And Israel sent high-ranking delegates, political figures, and religious figures to assist in any way they could in helping the Turkish response to what those four terrorist bombings. And one of the other things that is significant about the Israeli-Turkish relationship is that Turkey is a Muslim country, a modern Muslim country that is supportive of Israel and has full diplomatic relations with Israel. And Israel is very appreciative of the close relationship Turkey and Israel have. So, and I might add that the Turkish government, generally speaking, has been remarkably appreciative of its Jewish population. Mm-hmm. So the longstanding Jewish Turkish component of the total Turkish population feels very much connected with the country. So there's a, you might say, both a happy connection between Jews who are Turks and the Turkish government and Israel and Turkey.
Let me ask just a couple of personal questions, if I may. You're married, you have children. Did you get a phone call when those the reports came out about the bombings in Turkey saying, come home?
No. I think even though my family was somewhat concerned about me going, I think once I had called them after my initial arrival and said things look pretty good here and not to worry, I think they took it seriously and basically stopped worrying. Mm-hmm. From our point of view here in America, I suppose Turkey and Israel are pretty close together because they're in the Middle East. From the Israeli point of view, Turkey is quite a distance away. Mm-hmm. And in fact, while we were in Israel, there were a couple of shootings of border guards, but that was on the border. And mm-hmm. we were far from the border, relatively speaking, in Israel. Right. So there was really no cause for concern.
And what about among your delegation, among the conference that you're attending in Israel? What was the discussion about why the attacks on Turkey? Why this particular country?
Well, we didn't talk about it within our delegation, but I have some thoughts on my own mm-hmm. about this. I think that the terrorism is becoming, you know, worldwide, and that the terrorists are going to strike wherever they can to try to create havoc. And Turkey, as I said, has been supportive of Israel and is also very much interested in becoming involved in the European Economic Community and is a strong ally of the United States. So all these factors are not what the terrorists want to have as the case, and they want to disrupt Turkish society as best they can. So one of the interesting things is at our temple, Sinai Temple, this past Friday evening on Erev Shabbat, the beginning of the Sabbath, we had a service in which we held a memorial along with celebrating the Sabbath for the people who died in the Turkish bombings. And we had many members of the Turkish population attending our service who were part of the Turkish Students Association, as well as several ministers from the community, including yourself, Steve.
Well, I was sorry to be there on that kind of an occasion, but of course it was good to be there for the Sabbath celebration, Sabbath worship. It was interesting that you also received condolences and support from, in terms of letters, from the local Muslim community. Of course, it was the end of Ramadan, and the Muslims could not be there in person, but they did write letters, which were read in the synagogue.
Yeah, and I think they were appreciated by the Jewish community as well as by the Turkish students who were there. I might add that the Turks themselves are Muslims, most of them, mm-hmm. and but perhaps many of them are not as observant as those who were at the mosque. Observing Ramadan.
Sure. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon about the situation in Israel with Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple in Champaign-Urbana. He's recently returned with a delegation of six folks from this area who went to a United Jewish Communities General Assembly, which is an annual meeting that's usually held in this country, but this year was held in Jerusalem.
That's right.
And at one other previous time had been held in Israel?
Yes, I gather 5 years ago was the first time they'd held the General Assembly in Israel. Uh-huh. And I think I think one of the main reasons it's done is to show that there is a lot of support in the world Jewish community for Israel as a sovereign Jewish state.
Solidarity. Let me encourage listeners, if you have questions for our guest today on Keeping the Faith, please call in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. And people who are listening elsewhere, including on the Internet, may call us with a special toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And we do have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to the local line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hi. I have a comment and a question. The comment is I have in my front yard a sign that says peace is patriotic. And my question is, do you think that's naive? I don't think so, but I just wanted to hear your guest comment on that, having been there so recently. And I'll hang up and listen to the answer. Thanks.
Peace is patriotic.
Well, I think any way in which we can get peace is a good thing. Associating it with patriotism sounds fine to me. You may be aware, I don't know, that the prayer for peace in Jewish religious life is omnipresent. We must probably in most of our prayers there is an inclusion of the idea of wanting God to help us bring peace to the world and our place in the world. So I'm a great advocate for peace myself, so I applaud your effort. If you are saying, and I don't know, but if you're saying that peace at any cost, that's another issue, because in Judaism there's a principle that it's very important to have the right to defend your life against aggression. So that, even though there is this caveat that defense is not only reasonable but commanded, other than that, peace is a very important aspect of Jewish life. And there's no greater commandment than those, and no greater saintly act than to make peace between people.
So the notion in Judaism of peace or shalom would include it's not necessarily a statement in favor of pacifism, which
right.
means no self-defense, no violence in any case, but would be more of a sense of if there's to be justice, there has to be the right for people to defend themselves.
Exactly right.
Uh-huh. We have another caller. We'll get back to topics of shalom in a moment, but on line two, you're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Rabbi Klein.
Right. I haven't been able to hear the whole show, but since you're talking about your commitment to peace, I wonder if you might have met any of the, what I regard as very valiant Israeli Jews who are leading the effort, people such as the founder of Rabbis for Human Rights, who are accompanying Palestinians to the olive orchards to help them take in their crops over the depredations of settlers and others, trying to get them past the lines. People like the fellow that's organized the group against home demolitions, and maybe Aaron Shapiro of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement. People who have really put themselves on the lines very actively for peace, not any kind of wimpy pacifism. I think those are the people that I wish more American Jewry, and actually all more Americans, would hear these stories, because I think that we're failed very, very much by not knowing these kind of details about what's happening on the ground. We rather hear lots of platitudes about support for a sovereign Jewish state. I think that we need a secular state. I think we need a secular state here in the U.S., but I'd rather you address the first points first there.
I thought we had a secular state in the U.S. At least I hope that's the case. In Israel, there's, as I said in the beginning of the piece, which maybe you didn't hear, there's such a freedom of expression that absolutely nothing that could be stated by you or any other member of the American population has not already been said in Israel. I think your point's well taken, that sometimes people don't hear everything that's happening in Israel, and that's perhaps the fault of the some news services, but it certainly wasn't the case at the General Assembly. The rabbinic organization that you talked about, Rabbis for Peace, I think it's called, had a booth in the General Assembly, and I did stop there and get some of their material. So, yes, there was an opportunity to hear all branches of all expressions, you might say, of the political spectrum while we were in Israel.
And is another name that he mentioned, Aaron Shapiro in Israel, a name you're familiar with?
I'm not personally familiar with
him. Mm-hmm. What about the caller was also talking about the need for a secular state in Israel. That's a very controversial issue, of course.
Yeah, I suppose we'll need a lot more time than we've got to try to figure out what exactly you mean by that. But the way things are now, from the point of view of the importance of Israel being a homeland for Jews who previously had no homeland before, it would be a very hard thing to be able to arrange Israel in such a way that it could continue to function as a place where Jews under repression in various other countries might have a place to go and still have a secular state. If you mean, on the contrary, that people who functioned in Israel as citizens would not have religious law as part of the law governing them, Jewish religious law, that may be more and more the case, because there is a very strong push within the Israeli citizenry to reduce the impact of the initial state of affairs in Israel, whereby a Orthodox religious component is always in every government, and have control over certain aspects of you might say, marital life. So that's another issue as to, you know, the preponderance in Israel of the secular majority versus the religious minority. But I'm not sure that's what you were referring to.
Well, thank the caller for the comments and question. Let me take just a moment, since we're about halfway through our program here on Keeping the Faith this Sunday. We're talking with Rabbi Norman Klein from the Sinai Temple in Champaign-Urbana about the current situation in Israel. We'll get back to him in just a moment. A couple announcements. There is the 33rd Annual Peace Bazaar in Champaign-Urbana, starting on September 6th, which is a Saturday, from 9 to 3 p.m. at Community United Church of Christ. The Peace Bazaar features gifts and baked goods, chocolates, UNICEF cards, calendars, household items, furniture, toys, books, plants, gift certificates, local businesses, works by local artists. All funds raised from the Peace Bazaar go to local and international groups supporting peace and social justice. It's supported by the Urbana-Champaign Friends Meeting, sometimes known as the Quakers, and the Community United Church of Christ. That'll be at the Community Church, 805 South 5th Street. That's the corner of 6th and Daniel in Champaign. Again, the date for that is Saturday, December 6th from 9 to 3. UNICEF cards are also available at the University YMCA at 1001 South Wright from a little before 12 to a little after 1 p.m. on the week of December 1 through 5. So that's UNICEF cards. Many people pick up this time of the year. Mentioning the University Y, the Y is one of the groups that supports these Keeping the Faith programs. The Y is the oldest religious organization at the university. It was founded 130 years ago, just 6 years after the university began. Since that time, has been helping develop student appreciation for social action and community service by providing opportunities for that during their school years. The Y is a nonprofit organization and depends on contributions from friends and supporters. We receive no money from the government or from the university budget. It's an independent organization. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I am the director of the University Y. Some programs coming up there in the weeks ahead. On December 5th, Friday night, part of our international film series called Real World, R-E-E-L, World, a film from Brazil. Friday, December 5th at 7:47, the classic film Black Orpheus will be shown. These are free films for international students, but also American students, anyone else in the community who would like to attend. This time of year at the Y, we're also encouraging people who might like to teach a community class starting in January to contact us, tell us what kind of a course you might like to teach. It's a way to make a little extra money teaching something, perhaps. For example, there are courses on photography. On starting your own small business has been offered in the past. How to live more simply. A course on C.S. Lewis was taught this last semester, A Woman's Sharing Circle, as well as courses in dance and martial arts and yoga and all sorts of things. If you have a class you'd like to teach, please look at the Communiversity way it works on our website at universityymca.org, or call the Y and ask to speak to Nick Fleege, 337-1500 in Champaign. That's area code 217, to teach a course on Communiversity starting next semester. Let's see. I might also mention the Y accepts the donation of automobiles, cars, trucks, vans, SUVs, as one of the ways we survive financially. So if you itemize your taxes, you can take a tax deduction by donating a vehicle to the Y and not have to go through the hassle of trading it in or selling it yourself. You can call me at the Y, 337-1500 during the week. The number is 337-1500. Coming up next week here on WILL AM 580 are a couple programs that might be of special interest to listeners to Keeping the Faith. On Focus 580 on Tuesday, David Inge is talking with Mary Lefkowitz, who's a professor of the humanities at Wellesley College, by phone, about Greek gods, human lives, what we can learn today from myths, some of the discussion about some of the ancient gods of the Greeks from many years ago. That's one program that might be of interest. Another one, Celeste Quinn will be talking Monday afternoon at 1 with Jay Nugaborin, professor of English at University of Massachusetts, by phone on Open Heart, a patient story of life-saving medicine and life-giving friendship. So, a couple programs that might be of interest to listeners to Keeping the Faith. Let's get back to our guest today. We're talking with Rabbi Norman Klein of Sinai Temple about the situation in Israel, and listeners are encouraged to call with comments or questions. You may call 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana area, or 1-800-222-9455. Rabbi, when you and this small group went to Israel this over the last, how long were we there total?
We were there from, well, we left on November the 9th and we got back on the 20th.
Okay.
But it's a overnight flight, so we actually arrived on the 10th.
Sure. Would you encourage others to visit Israel this time?
Very much. And it's always fun to go. It's a place full of interest for people who are interested in any aspect of, you know, the three major religions. There are more religions, of course, but Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. They're at the center, one of the centers of all three, and certainly the center for Judaism. It's a very vibrant society, very interesting people. The food's fun. Breakfasts are fantastic, I might add.
Tell us about a typical breakfast.
Well, a breakfast at a hotel is an extravagant display of all kinds of salads and salted fish, cheeses, different forms of egg concoctions, more kinds of yogurt than you can imagine, fruit, all kinds of wonderful things. typically when you finish a hotel breakfast, you're in shape for the rest of the day, though you keep seeming to see more food. And then there's, of course, the famous falafel, which you may or may not have had before. It's a fried vegetable sandwich. And there's lots of other wonderful things to eat. And the place itself is very varied geographically. Despite the fact that it's the size of New Jersey, it has climates that are both tropical and temperate. It's got skiing in the north at Mount Hermon and scuba diving on the west and the south at Eilat. It has ruins dating back to the time of the cavemen, Neolithic and before, perhaps, all the way to contemporary structures that are architecturally very interesting, too.
So there may not be surfing on the Mediterranean, but you have a lot of variety there.
Even there, there's, I remember reading a couple of years ago about a rabbi who was a surfer. He's on the internet somewhere in Israel.
So you have from the mountain skiing to the beach, but you don't have Schwarzenegger as governor to deal with. We have a caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Norman Klein. Yes, go ahead on line one.
I had two questions. One involves, I'm curious about the significant issues that came before this General Assembly, what you felt were the significant issues. And also I'm curious about whether you were in conversations about the wall and interested to hear how people in Israel feel about the wall. Thank you.
So, significant issues at the General Assembly, and then questions about the new wall that's being put up.
Okay. The major presenters were the major figures in the Israeli government, and their primary concern was peace and security. And their other primary concern was the economy of Israel, which is linked to the American economy and therefore has been in a slump over the past recent period of time, but is on the upswing as the American economy is on the upswing. And as to the peace and security issue, their main concern is both the reduction of casualties from terrorism and the attempts to pursue a peace process. So I would say those were the major issues, but there were lots of other very important issues. For instance, we were talking before about the non-Jewish residents in Israel, and I'd mentioned the Druze and the Bedouins. I also attended a very interesting discussion about the Arab citizens of Israel, not the Bedouins and the Druze so much as the Arabs who are Israeli citizens who are you might say, of the mainstream variety, Shiites or Sunnis, and how they could their lot could be improved in Israel. The main issue there has been a longstanding one, having to do with not being able to serve in the Israeli army, and because it's a citizens' army in which everyone is drafted. I say all males and all females who are Jewish, and then all Druze, men, women are not drafted among the Druze, and Bedouins can volunteer for certain aspects of the army. But everyone else, all those who are the 1.5 million Arab population, cannot serve in the army. It's seen as a potential conflict of interest, having relatives in other parts of the Arab world, as a result, their benefits after the army are not present for the Arabs. It's a society that you might say that being in the army is sort of a rite of passage that leads to various opportunities in your professional life. So that's something that still needs to be worked on in great depth, and the Israeli society and government are working on bringing up issues that can be resolved on that score. So that's some of the major issues. There were a lot of others. I'm not exactly sure what you... Oh, do you want to ask a question?
Well,
and
I think the questioner was then asking about was there discussion at the General Assembly about either formally or informally about the new defensive, the wall, which Israelis claim is a needed defense separating...
There was reference to it. Not so much necessarily discussion, but reference to it. And we actually, in part of our mission, we visited that wall, this fence, as it's still under construction. It's, I think, about a third of the country has been covered, something like that. Still north of Jerusalem. And being on the ground, actually seeing it and hearing what the results of it were, I found were very interesting. We visited one community where the wall in some forms is a fence, and in other places it's a cement sort of prefab construction. It's a smart fence that has electronic surveillance connected with it. As soon as this wall was put up around this part of Israel where we visited, the decline in car theft, among other things, and terrorist activity in this area dropped precipitously. I wasn't even aware of the car theft problem, but it turns out that that the rate of car theft was very, very high in Israel, and it had to do partly with these cars then being turned around and used as vehicles for terrorism, in which bombs would be placed, and they would have Israeli licenses on them, and and be hard to identify. The fence effectively stops this from happening. It also makes it much, much harder for a person to pass beyond that fence who is going to be engaged in terrorism. And that's, I think, the sole purpose of the fence. I know there are people on the other side of the fence, so to speak, who feel it is a de facto border, but the Israelis did make a point of stating, both at the GA and at various private discussions, that fence could be moved as soon as some kind of peace process is underway. And they gave as an example the fence between Lebanon and Israel, that was moved every time the UN had anything, any kind of discussion about what was the right place for that fence to be. It was moved sometimes weekly or biweekly. So there's no reason that this fence couldn't be moved too. While it looks solid, it can be moved.
And this brings us, of course, to the issue of the various proposals and the so-called roadmap to peace, and issues like the Palestinian state. 2 weeks ago on this program, Ray Hanania was our guest, an American, Palestinian-American, by phone. And one of the things that he was talking about was, hoping for eventually some movement towards a Palestinian state, perhaps West Bank, perhaps Gaza, perhaps, other boundaries. What was discussion at the General Assembly recently last week about those kind of issues?
Well, I think it's almost, there are very few people in Israel who do not believe in the two-state solution. I think, remarkably, considering that the current government in Israel is the Likud coalition, which is the a coalition of the right, they also, as a government, have affirmed a two-state solution, including Prime Minister Sharon. It's a matter of talking about the details, and also it's a matter, from the point of view of the Israelis and I think most American Jews, it's a matter of getting someone on the other side who really wants a solution, as opposed to the ongoing conflict. I have yet to meet an Israeli who doesn't want peace and is not willing to have a two-state solution. I'm sure there are some, but I haven't met them. and they're certainly not the majority.
And what about a divided Jerusalem?
Well, that's another issue, I suppose. I personally would not like to see it. I think certainly from all the experiences that I've had in Israel, and based on my actually being in Israel right after the Six-Day War, the contrast between the lack of access to the holy sites in Jerusalem previous to the Six-Day War and the open access that the Israeli government has allowed to the holy sites in Jerusalem after the Six-Day War is startling, to say the least, and should be something that everyone should appreciate.
And by holy sites, you mean Jewish, of course, but also Christian and Muslim.
Exactly. Oh. In other words, the current status is that the previous caller had asked about the wall. The way things are now, the Israeli government is in charge of the base of the wall and the wall itself, and the Muslim authorities are in charge of the top of the wall, which is...
Now you're talking about the Wailing Wall.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, the Wailing Wall. I'm sorry, yes. Yeah. I would move from the border fence to the ancient wall that was built by Herod as a support for the Second Temple.
Right.
At the top of this wall is two mosques, Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock, and those are in the control of the Muslim authorities. And the Israelis have set this up in this way. So I only wish it had been the case when the Jordanians were in control of the Old City that they had allowed as anything close to the free access that the Israelis have allowed for all religious groups. It was very, very difficult for Israelis to, Jews of any stamp, to go to the Western Wall during that regime.
Since you're talking about visitors to Jerusalem and other parts of Israel and Palestine, often during the Christmas season, Israel has been a destination of choice for Christian pilgrims, visitors, travelers. Would you encourage people, even at this relatively late date, to consider making a trip to Israel over as Christians to visit?
Yes, I would very much encourage it for several reasons. One, as I said, I think your security is in good hands with the Israelis. I've never seen such a such professionalism in regard to the security efforts made for this convention, and I think for every single tourist group that goes to Israel. Every tourist bus has both a very experienced guide and a guard who is armed, but the armor is hidden. He doesn't like walk around with guns flashing, but he's perfectly capable of handling himself. And there's the communication between the bus and the police and various agencies that might warn of danger ahead is instantaneous. So it's a very safe place to visit for that reason, and Israel could certainly use the visitors. Because of the Intifada that's lasted now for 3 years, the tourist aspect of the economy has gone south, and it was a very, very big part of the Israeli economy. Now it's no longer as big a part as it was before. It is on the upswing, and there are many Christian groups that have gone over the past 3 years, but certainly more should be encouraged, and I think they'd have a fine time.
What does it cost?
Good question. It varies, of course, depending on how luxurious your trip you want to be and how long you stay. But
what's the flight, roughly?
Since I bought this as a package, I couldn't break it down for you, but I would say $2,500 would be a fairly conservative estimate for a week and a half.
Total cost,
yeah.
And when you're in Israel, what's a hotel cost?
I can't again tell the specifics because I bought it as a package. But if I'd known you wanted the statistics, I would have bought them from a tourist agency.
No, it's better.
But there's quite a range of hotels. I mean, I would say top of the line, at least the ones I've stayed at. I think there's one that's even more fancy now, is the King David Hotel, which you may have heard of. It's a historic hotel. During the British Mandate in Jerusalem, it's still there. It's a wonderful hotel.
And right across from the King David Hotel
is the YMCA.
Is the Jerusalem YMCA.
Which I've stayed at, which is relatively inexpensive.
Is it?
Yes.
I've never been.
I've been there many times. I don't think it has air conditioning, but in Jerusalem you don't need it so much.
Uh-huh.
But it's a wonderful place to stay and also historic. Mm-hmm. In terms of its architecture and everything else.
And I might just mention that the YMCA in Jerusalem is one of the few Ys around the world that is organized and administrated through the YMCA in the United States. And it has a board made up a third of Christians, a third of Jews, a third of Muslims that make decisions about it. So
that's
it's
right.
A very unusual YMCA. Mm-hmm.
And the times I've stayed there, basically it's the Arab population that are the staff of the hotel.
Interesting.
They may be Arab Christians. I'm not sure, but they're of the Arab community. Mm. Most of the employees. Mm.
But you felt comfortable staying there.
I stayed there.
How many times have you been to Israel?
Well, I guess I've been there more than six times. I sort of lost count. Yeah. I lived there for 2.5 years and visited several times as a tourist.
Mm. And when will you be going back?
Soon, I hope. I'm in the beginning stages of trying to organize a temple trip in a year or so. My understanding is that the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation is thinking of doing something similar. Perhaps we can join our efforts in some way. We'll see.
Are there ever interfaith groups that travel to Israel?
That's something I might want to organize myself. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. Usually they're organized privately by a specific community, like the Champaign-Urbana community. It's a wonderful thing to do. Each of the different constituent elements would be able to visit the other's sites mm-hmm. and have a sense of why they're so important to them. Mm-hmm. And I've, in my own travels, have made quite an effort to visit those sites of the Christian and Islamic community. Mm-hmm. I've been on the Temple Mount and to Bethlehem, for instance, mm-hmm. to Nazareth.
Well, we've run out of time. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Rabbi Norman Klein from Sinai Temple in Champaign, Illinois. We've been talking about the situation in Israel. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. Next week on Keeping the Faith, I'll be traveling out to visit my daughter in sunny San Diego, where fortunately she did not have to face the fires directly herself. Our Becca Nieto will be the guest host next week, and she'll be talking with Tim Maynard about the power of prevention in the Boy Scout organization. Alex Gehrman of the Unitarian Universalist Church will be our guest on Keeping the Faith December 7th, talking about the debate on traditional religious language. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Swire's Land and Management Company, Danville; Michael W. Walker Consulting, Urbana; and Natural Gourmet, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
A Swedish environmentalist believes we really should give back to the Earth even after we've died. Her company is trying to replace cremation with a technologically enhanced form of organic composting, and she's already got the support of King Carl Gustav and the Church of Sweden. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Giving Life After Death. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at 7 on AM 580 WILL Urbana.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, a chance of rain and snow, then a chance of snow after midnight. Breezy and much cooler with the low in the upper 20s and northwest winds 20 to 25 miles per hour, gusting to around 45 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of flurries, much cooler with a high in the mid-30s, and west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, gusting to 40 miles per hour during the morning. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.